ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
KHJ Los Angeles.
3:31 in Los Angeles. This is the real Don Steve.
I know that it's time, and you're saying it.
All right, welcome back. It's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. If you love classic movies, then you love the Turner Classic Movies Network. Ben Mankiewicz is a host of TCM and is joining us to talk about the history of the Academy Awards, TCM's 31 Days of Oscar, and his thoughts for Best Picture this year. The upcoming TCM Classic Film Festival in April is coming up. We'll talk about that, too. And here's Ben Mankiewicz. Happy Oscar weekend to you, my friend.
Thanks for having me on. It's always an exciting time in Los Angeles.
Yeah, you are heading to the Oscars this weekend. That's got to be exciting.
It is. You know, I got to say, I've never been in. You know, I've been outside on the red carpet asking silly questions. I'm happy never to do that again. Of course, it's exciting. I don't want to be cynical. You know, there's an easy way to. There's a lot of temptation in this town to do. Oh, I got to do the Oscars. Oh, it's a pain in the ass and the driving and the parking and the. Getting through security. Look, I'm going to the Oscars. It's great.
It is great. All right, here's the gift bag. I don't know if you get a gift bag, but here's the gift bag. You're going to get a 24-karat gold vape pen, free Botox, and a Hawaiian vacation. I mean, what's wrong with that?
I've been to the SAG Awards a bunch of times, and I've been to the Golden Globes, and so I've gotten some gift bags, and
ooh.
Cool. And it's always strange to me how many wildly impractical things are in the gift bag. And I've never gotten anything with tremendous value, except usually the bag. And the bag itself frequently is sort of nice. And I'm using this sort of expanded briefcase weekender that I got at SAG Awards. It's next to me right now.
No, that's cool.
As I navigate the streets of Los Angeles while talking to you.
That's cool. Very cool. Very, very cool. I want to talk a little history first. You know, the Oscars dating back, of course, to the 1920s. This was a brainchild of a head of a big studio to put together an award ceremony like this.
If it didn't happen then, it would have happened shortly thereafter. I mean, the instinct out here to celebrate themselves is very strong,
right.
Very powerful.
Yeah.
But of course, it's also it's marketing, right? This is a big night to sell this business, and it makes sense. And there's obviously interest in it. You know, it's an incredibly profitable event for the television networks that have bid on it, ABC Now, and so I get it. It almost seems too bad to me that it's the culmination now of all these other shows, because there's a degree of burnout in it, and seeing these great stars sort of, you know, again and again and again, looking as perfect as they ever can. And but still, this is the big one. This is the one that that counts. It's earlier this year than ever, and that history, it's got a great, wonderful history, and the fact that it went on every year and that it went on during the war, but they toned it down, understanding the sacrifices that Americans were making, sacrifices we don't really ask Americans to make anymore for some national cause. You know, of course, they toned it down as well in 2002, the first Oscar ceremony after September 11th.
I saw the first Oscar ceremony recap in a newspaper, and they were talking about the Warner Brothers movie, The Jazz Singer. It was one of the first talkies, but it wasn't allowed to compete for Best Picture that year. Like, they thought, did they think it was a passing fancy, or they didn't think it was fair to put a talkie in with all the silent films being nominated? Like, what was the reason behind that?
Well, there was legitimate, and for some time, thought, will this format last, right?
Wow.
Is this a flash in the pan? Is you know, our silence true cinema, and that's what we'll end up with? Because that was, of course, all anybody knew. I think the smart, innovative executives and artists recognized the first time they heard sound, like, oh, yeah, of course. And those who recognized, hey, we're going to just make this better. Like, it was complicated at first. There are all sorts of processes involved here that we don't understand. I mean, they couldn't figure out how to mic separate people, how to have two people mic'd at once, right?
Yeah.
The notion of dubbing later didn't occur to them, right away.
Right.
So getting the sound at the time was incredibly difficult. And then 100% of theaters in America were not equipped to play the sound. Right. So there had to be, and the theater, you know, and that monopoly existed in general, not exclusively, but in general, of the movie studios also owning the means of distribution, the theaters. So that meant conversion of the movie houses to be able to play sound and have it sound good, right? And that process was daunting, of course. So there was not an immediate rush or presumption that this would work. And there were still movies made as late, really, as 1930. There may even have been a couple after that. I'm leaving out Charlie Chaplin and an artistic decision to continue making silent films. But up until, you know, certainly throughout the 20s and even into 1930, there were movies made both ways. You know, as a silent and as a silent picture with some sound, but not a full on talkie with dialogue. So it took a while, and then you know, by 1930, it was very clear that that silent films were a thing of the past.
You guys always do such a great job, you know, surrounding the Oscars with the 31 days of Oscar. It's a 25th year of doing this on Turner Classic Movies. Whether it's movies that won Best Picture, Best Actor, Actress. You can watch all of this through early March. It's quite an event.
Yeah, we have we've done 31 days of Oscar for close to 20 years now, and it's our signature event along with Summer Under the Stars, which we do in August, where we devote 24 hours of each day to a single star. But 31 days of Oscar starting on February 1st and running, I guess, normally through March 3rd, but it's a leap year, so I'm running through March 2nd
right.
This year.
We'll
every movie we show 24 hours a day will be either an Oscar winner or a nominee. And the movies will connect to one another through an actor in each cast. You know, so an actor who's in both casts of the preceding movie and then that movie, and then there'll be a different actor to connect you to the next movie. So it's just a little, you know, it's a little 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon version yeah. that we play with 31 days of Oscar.
Well, and I always feel like, you know, here's the best part. Yeah, you get to get introduced to these films that you may have not seen before, but you always learn something. And I love some of those backstories, those side stories that come along with that, because it does give great perspective to what you're watching.
Well, we really led by Robert Osborne. We figured it out, you know, that there's a that manner of storytelling works, right? It just appeals to people. That and there's a time, you know, when Robert started, when he, you know, introduced the first movie in 1994, Citizen Kane. Excuse me. you know, the most important one, the 1939 movie that everybody saw that I don't have to name.
No, you don't have to.
Gone with the Wind.
We get it. I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's going to come to me. I love it when I can't think of the name of the most famous movie of all time. So when Robert introduced Gone with the Wind on April 14th, 1994, you know, his lead-in was like 3.5 minutes, and some of his early lead-ins were pushed 4 minutes. And it turned out that's too long. Like, you know, you just sort of, after about two and a half minutes, people want you to start the movie.
Dive in. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know this could be like asking, like, you know, who your favorite child is or brother or sister. But, you know, out of all the films, I mean, seriously, that you've seen, that you've led the conversation over these years, these Oscar winning films or performances, what are some personal favorites of yours? Like, what are ones that just stand out that, you know, if you had to put together, you know, a top list of these films just changed film history. They were just groundbreaking performances, the writing, like these are the movies. What would they be, Ben?
Do they have to be Oscar nominated movies? Because they aren't always. Right?
No, I mean, no. Yeah.
You know, I look at I mean, I have no good way to answer that question, except Casablanca is the movie that I could probably see the most times that moves me, and I think that that's true of so many people. There are other movies that get me like that. I can watch Shawshank Redemption that many times, and I think Shawshank Redemption is one of the great films. I mean, it, you know, on IMDb, it's rated as the best movie ever made.
Yeah.
There's a flaw with that system, and it's not scientific polling, but it's significant that it's there. I don't think it's the best movie of all time, but it is consistently moving. But I look at a year like 1957, mm-hmm. Which had three movies that I think four really that were just stunning in their ability to sort of speak to the world we were about to live in. Ahead of, you know, they were prescient, and they again were perfect sort of little perfect pieces of cinema, and that would be a Sweet Smell of Success,
mm-hmm.
Which gave us a glimpse into the power of the media, of a corrupted media.
Yeah, Burt Lancaster, Tony Curtis, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Burt Lancaster's performance there as a version of Walter Winchell, as a powerful columnist who's most interested in protecting his power and not in telling the truth. And then another media movie. I mean, Elia Kazan directed a film of Bud Schulberg's script, A Face in the Crowd, where you also see that Andy Griffith was capable of such greatness as an actor, and would have been a truly great actor if he had gone that route instead of sort of playing this folksy version of what people perceived him to be on The Andy Griffith Show, which is obviously a great show. I mean, mm-hmm. he made a choice that probably most people would make, but he could have been a truly, truly great actor. And then the Bridge Over the River Kwai, which won Best Picture, David Lean's film, obviously is just this, you know, great piece of cinema and maybe the one of the, you know, 5 or 10 best World War II movies ever made. Certainly some people would argue that it's the best and that they have a valid argument. And then my favorite, arguably my favorite movie of all time, certainly my favorite war picture, comes out in 1957 also, and it's not Bridge Over the River Kwai, it's Bridge Over the River Kwai, it's Paths of Glory.
Paths of Glory.
Stanley Kubrick's a film with Kirk Douglas, you know, who we've just lost. I just Paths of Glory and Paths of Glory. It's funny because Paths of Glory is so good in my head. It's this 2.5 hour epic about injustice and classism and the pointlessness of World War One, the utter pointlessness of World War One. Which, if I have any complaint about the movie that I'm pretty sure is going to win Best Picture this year, 1917, which is beautiful and well-made and moving and good, but it was so pretty. Roger Deakins, the cinematographer, was so good that the movie, and I'm stealing a point that I am not sure it occurred to me, something was bothering me about the movie, although I liked it very much, and it's really extremely well-made, but Manola Dargis wrote this in the New York Times, and there's a antiseptic quality to the movie that it fails to capture what I think is critical in telling any World War One story, of the barbarity and pointlessness of that war. And by making everything beautiful, even the things that are gross are beautiful. You know, when the one of the soldiers, you know, is in a bunker and puts his hand through the gaping wound of a dead soldier next to him by accident, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's supposed to be disgusting, but it's so pretty that you fail to get what Paths of Glory conveyed, which was the, again, brutality, ugliness, pointlessness of war, and the contempt that the officer corps is capable of having, the command structure is capable of having for the actual men who are putting their lives at risk.
Yeah.
And, you know, Europe, for no reason at all, just sacrificed an entire generation of men under 30 years old in World War One, and Paths of Glory does a perfect job of delivering that message. But it's not a 2.5 hour epic; it's like 88 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not a very long film. And you're talking about 57. All the impactful. I mean, 12 Angry Men, I think, was 50. Was it 57 or 58? But it was right around then, too.
You know, right. No, and I, by the way, there's a whole other movie that I forgot to mention. That there are five movies, and 12 Angry Men.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Again, this sense of injustice, and these are all movies that would be 12 Angry Men. By the way, in that IMDb top 10, what's remarkable about that? Many things that are surprising about that list. You know, the Godfather 2 is there. There's some movies that you would expect to be there, but of movies from the period that TCM thrives on, classic Hollywood, really, you know, from the advent of sound until, say, 1959, you know, when the studio system started to lose its magical hold, that the only movie in the top 10 from that era is 12 Angry Men.
Wow.
You know, this, you know, a claustrophobic a drama that's quick and is set in one location for 95% of the film takes place in a jury room, and that somehow cracked the top 10. So, yes, you're 100% correct. There are really for me, four movies from that year that moved me. And then the fifth that I have to include because it's great is Bridge on the River Kwai, which I don't have the same intense emotional reaction to, but I'm not, believe me, I'm not criticizing.
Yep, no, not at all. This is 1917 you just mentioned. So you're talking about Paths of Glory. You got 1917, this year's Oscars, you know, Joker, Irishman, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Ferrari, Ford versus Ferrari, Jojo Rabbit, Little Women, Marriage Story, you know, Parasite. So 1917 is your pick.
I think 1917 is going to win. It wouldn't be, if I had a vote, it wouldn't be the movie that I voted for, but I think it's going to
win.
And I don't think any of the, you know, I don't want to spoil it for you, but I can tell you who's going to win the six big categories, and I'd be very surprised if I were wrong on any of them.
Yeah, what do you think is going to win for the
1917 is going to win Best Picture. Joaquin Phoenix is going to win Renee Zellweger for Judy is going to win Best Actress.
Mm-hmm.
The supporting roles are going to go to Laura Dern and Brad Pitt, and Sam Mendes is going to win Best Director.
Ah.
And now I would love it if I'm wrong. I don't like, you know, I'm not going to, if you have me back, I'm not going to say I told you so. It's just, I'm a gambler.
Yeah,
I'm a gambler.
Yeah.
And if you pay attention to the odds that have set by bookmakers, it's pretty obvious. I mean, if you want to win your office pool,
That's where
I'd
to go.
I'd go with those six, yeah.
And you're going to see it live there, which is going to be spectacular. You also, guys, you do this classic film festival every year that I'm actually really interested in hitting this year. It always looks like a blast. It's in Hollywood, April 16th through the 19th. This is a pretty big deal. I mean, this is and this is a lot of fun. Like, if you love movies, you're going to love this event.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a success 10 straight years. This is our 11th. Festival. We had it was a big deal last year to get to 10. We, you know, when we did the first in 2010, we weren't 100% sure there was going to be a second. You know, we talked about it. The network had talked about it for 16 years since going on the air in 1994. We don't move at a very rapid pace. There's not a lot of, you know, but that's part of the reason why the show and the channel, excuse me, looks so consistently perfect. You know, we don't put anything on that doesn't look right. And you know, and our new general manager, Paula Chagnon, is so critical in maintaining that look and feel of the channel.
Love that.
So we don't rush into decisions, and it took us 16 years to decide to go ahead and do this festival. Should we do it in Hollywood? Should we do it in New York? There was a lot of debate. Should we go back and forth? But it worked so well that now, you know, it's an annual event, and I think it's an annual event that will never go away. It's just 4 days of celebrating movies. We have well over 100 events, I think something like 140, 150 events, counting screenings and discussions, smaller presentations, but Q&As whenever possible around every single film with someone, if we can, from the movie or someone who's written extensively about the movie. I met Kirk Douglas at the second DCM Film Festival, which was a...
Yeah, I saw a picture on stage of you two when I was doing some research, like back in 2012 or whatever it was. Yeah, that's pretty cool. What I love about this, it's for the fan. I mean, this is really for the fan. You know, Oscars are for the actors, so Screen Actors, Golden Globes. This is something truly for the movie lover, and that's why I think you've had such great success with it.
Yeah, right. No, and that's the best part of it. I mean, it always seems like a line that anybody would give, but I mean it. I feel it. This event is for the fans, and the best part of it, the whole point of it was to find a way to interact with our most dedicated fans.
And
we don't make money on this, right? I mean, you know, we try and curb our losses, but the idea here is a connection. Because the connection, you know, nostalgia is not just this ethereal idea. It really means something to people. And the channel connects us to all of us. I mean, not people who work there, but all of us as humans who love movies. It connects us to our past. You see a movie and you think about your dad or your mom. Maybe you saw it with them, or maybe you just know they loved it. And you see the era that they lived. I mean, we don't sit around and watch newsreels to learn what life was like in 1942. We watch pictures.
We watch movies. We do. Well, again, 25th year of the 31 Days of Oscar, and then, of course, the TCM Classic Film Festival, April 16th through the 19th. And, of course, you'll see Ben all over TCM every single day. I always appreciate your insight into the world of movies and your insight to the Oscars. I think you're right on, and have a great time on Sunday. Enjoy yourself.
I'm sure I will. Thank you very much.
All right, Ben.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks, pal. All right, top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next on 720 WGN.